Today is Monday, March 28, 2016. It is 1:03 in the afternoon. Good afternoon. Welcome back. And let the record show that the House Resources Committee is 1:03 p.m. We convene at 1:03 p.m. We have Representative Josephson present, Representative Heron present, Representative Wilson present, Representative Tarr present. Excuse me, my fellow co-chair, Representative David Tallarico, and myself, Representative Benny Noel. Today we have House Bill 373, approval of sale and royalty oil to Tesoro, and also House Bill 253, electronic tax return, mining license tax, and fees on the agenda. First, we have a presentation from the Department of Natural Resources regarding the state's royalty contract, and then we'll take public testimony. Would you please step forward, please? State your name for the record, and
thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Jim Shine. I'm a special project assistant in the DNR Commissioner's Office. Acting Commissioner Rutherford sends her regards. She had a prior speaking engagement today that she wasn't able to reschedule, so I'm here in her place. Can you hear me okay? So before the committee today is House Bill 373, which is the contract that would affirming the contract of sale of royalty oil to Tesoro. The presentation is going to provide a general overview of the royalty in kind sale process, the royalty board process, and then go into the actual contract terms. Please interrupt me if any time if you have questions or if something's unclear. So essentially, the state has a choice to elect to receive its royalty share of oil production in kind or in value. The presumption in statute is that we take our royalties in kind unless we find it's in the best interest of the state to take it in value. Conversely, the commissioner also has to make a best interest finding when we take royalty in kind. So when we do a royalty in kind process, we have to do a solicitation of interest. We commence the process with a solicitation of interest to gauge market demand, and we sent a letter in last January to the five in-state refineries. BP and Conoco each have a North Slope topping plant, as well as PetroStar that has refineries in North Pole and Valdez, Tesoro and Nikiski, and then we also sent a letter to Flint Hills, even though they had ceased operations in June of 2014. The responses we received, only two of which were seeking to refine our oil within the state, were from PetroStar and Tesoro. The Tesoro response met the demands of price. The price that we put out in our solicitation, whereas PetroStar responded affirmatively to purchase royalty oil, but proposed a different pricing structure that was not as advantageous to the state. Thus, we elected to proceed on a non-competitive contract negotiation with Tesoro. The fourth bullet point here is with respect to how we take our royalties now. Historically, the state has elected to choose its royalty in kind since 1979. Not all portions of our oil have been taken in kind, but to just clarify, we currently, right now, since February 1st, are taking all of our royalties in value. And that's because our most recent Tesoro contract terminated on January 31st, 2016. Up to that point, commencing in 1979, we've disposed of a significant volume of our royalty oil to PetroStar, Tesoro, Flint Hills, Williams, and other in-state users. So as I described on the non-competitive versus competitive negotiation, we elected to proceed with Tesoro. We started commercial negotiations with them in approximately February or March of 2015, which is the contract you see before you, the culmination of those commercial negotiations. When the commissioner elects to take the royalty in kind, we have to make a best interest finding that what we're doing is maximizing the benefits and the value of our resources for the citizens of the state. So some of the criteria outlined in 3805-183E provides the cash value offered the economic benefits, the benefits of refining in-state and meeting in-state demands, as well as some criteria that the Royalty Board considers as directed by the legislature in 3806-070.
For the record, Speaker Chenault is present.
Now I'm on slide five. Before I continue, I forgot to mention we do have the Division of Oil and Gas Director Feige on the line, as well as folks from the Division of Oil and Gas Commercial Section that might be able to answer any technical questions that I'm unable to provide answers to.
For the record, Representative Seaton is present. Proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On slide five, we go through the BIF process, which is a voluminous document going through the criteria that is outlined in statute on why the royalty in kind election is in the state's best interest. This process, like I mentioned, commenced in January of 2015 with a solicitation of interest and then a lengthy commercial negotiation with the Division of Oil and Gas and Tesoro. We then presented the proposed contract and a preliminary best interest finding for public comment in early February of 2016 that ran for 30 days. In that time, we received comments from PetroStar and ASRC. Those are the only comments we received. We since receiving those comments have revised the contract to address the concerns that were raised in their comment letters. Those comments and are included as an appendix in the proposed final contract in your bill packet. The next step in the process after we addressed their concerns was presenting it to the Royalty Board, which was done, I guess it's almost 2 weeks ago now, March 15th. The commercial section in the division provided the overview of the contract, walked through the process. The Royalty Board heard and voted unanimously to approve the contract and forward its recommendation to the legislature to ratify the contract. Included within your bill packet are a resolution signed by the board members, as well as a report to the legislature on why this proposed contract meets the best interests of the state. As I mentioned, the report in your bill packet does outline the reasons why the proposed contract meets the statutory criteria that the Royalty Board considers in its deliberation. And there's eight criteria. And they're very similar criteria to what the Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources considers, economic and price issues with respect to how they impact the state. The proposed contract before you is a five-year contract that would probably commence. The goal right now is to commence deliveries on August 1st, 2016. That would run for 5 years. The volumes that we would be selling to Tesoro are 20 to 25,000 barrels per day over the course of that contract. There are some safeguards and other provisions within this contract, one of which is if Tesoro nominates zero barrels over the course of 3 months, the contract terminates. And some of these provisions are pretty customary for what we've done in the past with RIK contracts. Most recently with Flint Hills, I believe the legislature ratified that contract in 2013. They terminated their operations in the spring of 2014, and therefore our royalty in kind contract with Tesoro, excuse me, with PetroStar ceased to exist after that point. There's also some security that the state has provided with respect to if Tesoro, for some reason, if their credit rating falls below a certain level, then they have to provide a letter of opinion from a financial analyst or provide a letter of credit equal to 90 days of ANS, the value of 90 days worth of ANS oil. And the purpose of that security provision is essentially if we're delivering oil and for some reason there is a somebody goes out of business, then we at least have a letter of credit that provides us some security that we're not going to be providing oil and not receiving any compensation. This has not happened to date, but this is still something that we can include in our contracts. Two other provisions in the contract of interest are in-state processing. This is one of the consideration the commissioner makes in issuing the solicitation of interest, is meaning in-state demand. And so the contract provides it to Tesoro. Use commercially reasonable efforts to use the refined products of ANS royalty within the state. Over the last 2 years, Tesoro has been purchasing royalty oil from the state, and they've used all of those barrels here in state. They've refined them and their Nikiski facility. We have representatives from Tesoro here that can speak to this more, but we've been told that nothing is planning on this, nothing is changing with respect to this contract, that these barrels are intended to be refined within the state of Alaska as well.
Well, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this slide where we're talking about the 90 days of royalty, is that looking forward, or is that the situation where if there was a bankruptcy, the bankruptcy court could go back and 90 days before and ask for, those being preferential payments and therefore claw them back from the state?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, my understanding of the 90-day value of ANS royalty is if the purchaser falls below a certain credit rating, then they would be required per this contract to provide the value of 90 days of ANS crude. My assumption is that that would be 90 days value of ANS crude as it currently exists at that time, not at today's dollars, but if this happens in 2019 or 2020, then we would look at what the value of the crude was at that point and require that 90-day payment.
Thank you. The point I was making was not that current dollar value, mm-hmm. but is that looking backwards so that 90 days before that date, payments that were made to the state would not be subject to recapture from a bankruptcy court? Is that going forward from that date where they have to post that so that they have money on file for oil that would be being purchased from that point on, where they have to post the letter of opinion?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, sorry if I didn't misunderstand your question before. I don't understand how it actually works in a bankruptcy proceeding, but what this is intended to address is the situation in which we have the contract where we're selling and Tesoro is purchasing oil on a daily basis. Their credit rating for some reason falls below a certain threshold, and then at that point we require 90-day, essentially a bond payment, to backstop any potential shortfalls that we would experience through a non-payment. As I mentioned, this has never happened before. We've never had to implement this provision, but it is a safeguard the state includes in its RIK contracts to ensure that should a purchaser not meet a certain credit threshold, that we do have some protection for the purchase of those royalty barrels that have already occurred.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Before we go on, I forgot to mention that for the record, Representative Hawker had been excused. Proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The last bullet point on slide 8 here with respect to employment of Alaska residents, that we include this in the contract. We can't require Alaska hire in this contract, but we do encourage that provision. On the RIK contract price itself, the valuation methodology for RIK takes the ANS spot price, which is essentially the monthly average of the daily average of the two reporting agencies, Platts and Reuters. You then net back from that point to get your RIK your RIK price. The $1.95 is the actual RIK differential that we deduct from the spot price, and then the other deductions or adjustments from that point onward are the same ones that you would see in an RIV valuation, which includes the tariff allowance for the TAPS transportation, the quality bank adjustments per any direction from the quality bank administrator, as well as any subtraction in line loss from pump station 1 to the Valdez Marine Terminal. The biggest differential between RIK and RIV would be with respect to the RIK location differential as it relates to what we would experience in an RIV world, which is a marine transportation deduction. Today, the marine transportation deduction on average is about $3.50 per barrel. And so the delta between the $3.50 deduction from a barrel of RIV to the $1.95 deduction we have for RIK here is where the state will see the most benefit in this contract over the status quo of RIV. And we've predicted, estimated based on predictions, that the delta between RIV and RIK will bring the state approximately $45 to $56 million more than we would have realized if we'd taken these barrels in value over the course of this contract. So approximately $10 million per year more that we'll realize as a result of this contract. This slide also goes into a little more detail of what I just described between the location differential and the transportation deduction. It also, one of the criteria that the Royalty Board and the Commissioner considers is the economic and social benefits to the economy. Tesoro employs 210 Alaskans, provides $127 million of benefits to the local economy, and refines approximately 59,000 barrels at Nikiski per day. And the majority of what they produce, I think 80% of the per barrel that's produced at Tesoro's Nikiski refinery is put back into the local economy through jet fuel, home heating fuel, ultra-low sulfur diesel. And like I mentioned, we have Tesoro representatives who can provide some more input on that if their state, if the legislature has questions. And the last slide here is respect to another provision that we added to the contract with Tesoro, which is also a provision that we're including with currently being negotiated contracts with PetroStar, that if we have additional volumes of royalty oil available that are not under contract, and we have a nomination period 100 days prior to you actually take a purchaser taking possession of those barrels, that we would offer those additional barrels on an equal basis to the two in-state refiners to purchase, so that we're maximizing the value of our resources and also providing more royalty oil at to the local refining industry.
Any other questions? Representative Seed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back on slide number 9, I'm curious, the line loss, the loss of volume between Pump Station 1 and Valdez Marine Terminal, is that mainly from temperature? Is that what we're looking at there, is volume loss?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I think folks online could probably answer that better, but it's a formulaic multiplier that is intended to represent, my understanding, yes, is lost through temperature and processing. I mean, because there are some losses that occur. Does anybody from the Division of Oil and Gas have more to offer on the line loss equation? Corey?
Hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Jim, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would ask that Greg Bidwell from our commercial section at the Division of Oil and Gas address this question. He was involved in the calculation and the contract drafting and would be able to speak to line loss estimation specifically. Greg, can you take this?
Sure. Line loss is...
Greg, you need to state your name for the record.
It's been traditionally, or it's been included in...
Greg, can you hear me? You need to state your name for the record. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Greg Bidwell, and I work here at the commercial section, the Division of Oil and Gas. And I would just say that, Jim, it seems like your definition of line loss is fine. It's a measurement error as well, and it just something that has been present in part of the TAPS tariff since inception. So it's been there as part of an item, whether paying royalties in value or in kind, it's there.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I guess I'm trying to figure out what factors, I mean, I'm hearing processing losses, but I'm not sure what processing there is, you know, getting to the tanker at the getting to the Valdez Marine Terminal. And I'm trying to find out if there is other losses, or are we just calculating in some percentage loss assumed, or are we talking about mainly temperature volume consideration with that adjustment?
Greg Bidwell, through the chair, I think that is primarily temperature and measurement rather than processing. The first four pump stations run off of natural gas from North Slope, but then as you go down, I think those pump stations use diesel, but I don't think they use diesel from the oil itself. So I think it's basically it's true that there isn't any processing. I think it's just temperature measurement oriented differences that are applied through the system.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Mr. Schein, looking at the March 7th letter from Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, they argue that there should have been proportional proration, and I just wanted to give you an opportunity to speak to that and sort of make a little bit of record as to the department's position on that.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is correct. The comments that PetroStar and ASRC raised with respect to the original contract that was presented to the public on early February, they had two primary concerns with respect to that contract, the first of which is the proration preference that was granted to Tesoro through the course of commercial negotiations that has since been removed. And to explain that further, we typically, when we have all of our royalty, when we're selling royalty, if there's, for instance, a service interruption or there's a seasonal maintenance work that happens and we have a reduction in royalty volumes available to meet our contractual demands or contractual obligations, then all RIK purchasers will be prorated down proportionate to their percentage of purchasing of our royalty oil. Through the course of the negotiations, Tesoro reduced their volumes, maximum nomination volume, so we could make more room, so to speak, for PetroStar's ability to purchase royalty oil from us. In exchange for that, we would grant the proration preference. But after public comments and internal deliberation, we decided to strike that term from the contract, so there is no longer a proration preference. We're back to the status quo, in which if there is any proration required, it comes down proportionate to each person, each purchaser. There's no preference for any RIK purchasers at this time. The other concern that PetroStar and ASRC raised with respect to the draft contract was the term of the contract. The proposed contract that went out for public comment had a five-year initial term with the option to extend for 5 years among consent of the state and Tesoro. We have since struck that extension out of the contract as well. So what resides before you now is the contract with a five-year term, no extensions, no proration preference.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Again, on slide 9, the $1.95 royalty in kind differential, that compared to the $3.50 marine transport for RIV, does that mean that that $1.95 is basically marine transport between Valdez and Tesoro's terminal, and does that also apply then to the other buyers? They have that same $1.95 in their term, whether they do marine transport or not.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, the $1.95 RIK differential is meant to represent the price of a local selling crude within the state of Alaska. It's not meant to represent marine transportation per se. I don't know what Tesoro's cost to ship between the Valdez Marine Terminal and its Nikiskie refinery actually are. But to your second point on whether this applies to the PetroStar, it absolutely does. These are the same RIK prices that we're negotiating contracts with PetroStar on right now, which, as I mentioned at the beginning of my comments, is meant to represent the cost of selling a barrel of oil within the state, exclusive of marine transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on the overall use of our, whether it's RIK or RIV, You were saying here in the transmittal, it talks about the remaining volume being available for PetroStar, and that is kind of working towards that. I was remembering in 2013 that we signed a contract with Flint Hills, and I just wanted to, as far as the overall distribution, is that one still in place?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, no, that contract has terminated since Flint Hills has ceased operating. That contract, you're correct, it was ratified by the legislature in 2013. I believe the volumes were 18 to 30,000 barrels per day over the course of 5 years. When they ceased operating in June of 2014, that contract terminated. And so as we exist today, the state actually does not have any royalty in kind barrels under contract or taking everything in value, which is, there's been a couple periods in the course of history starting back in 1979 that this has occurred, but primarily we sell a lot of our volumes, if available, in RIK. And so that's where we are now, is bringing this before you.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so then when we talk about the total volume available, it would be between these two at this time.
Yeah, I apologize. Representative Tarr, through the chair. We estimate, the commercial section has looked at the production forecast and current production levels, that we have approximately 50 to 52,000 barrels of royalty oil available right now. With current production forecasts and only considering current production that is online today without considering potential new projects, that decline curve is over the course of this contract will come down to approximately 36 to 38,000 barrels per day. So the 20 to 25,000 barrels that we're selling to Tesoro today, I think represents about maybe 55-60% of our overall royalty volumes available for purchase. Over the course of the next 5 years, that percentage will increase as production forecasts continue to fall.
Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I got a two-parter for you, Jim. What's the current quality bank adjustment under this contract?
Through the chair, Representative Olson, I don't know what the actual adjustment is in dollar figures right now. That is something that happens through the quality bank administrator, but that is something that is considered in this contract, that those adjustments through our valuation process takes into account what comes from the quality bank administrator for quality bank adjustments, whether they're up or down.
So if I wanted to compare it to what it was for Flint Hills, there wouldn't be something that we could get today then?
Representative Olson, through the chair, I don't have that at my fingertips right now. What I could be maybe speaking out of school, but I wouldn't imagine that it's much different than under the Flint Hills contract that was in 2013. It's the same provision that was allowed for in the last contract, but the quality bank administration is something that happens exclusive to how we operate.
Follow up. But isn't the adjustment originally for people like Flint Hills that were putting a waste product into the pipeline? I don't see Tesoro as doing that, so how could they be similar?
Well, through the chair, Representative Olson, you're correct. Flint Hills and PetroStar, who take their main feedstock for their refining off of taps and then refine it and then have to re-inject the residual or the heavy ends of the barrel, do pay a quality bank penalty for putting that lower quality oil back in, and it gets commingled among the other streams that are not taken out and refined. So they are subject to a different quality bank adjustment than, say, for instance, Tesoro would be as an end stream user at the Valdez Marine Terminal. So you're correct in that Tesoro wouldn't be necessarily paying the same kind of penalty as PetroStar's North Slope facility, North Pole facility, excuse me, or Flint Hills' former facility, just because of its location.
One last question.
Final.
How could they almost be the same, though, is what I'm getting at? One's flushing the toilet and the other one is, you know, the mixing zone.
Through the chair, Representative, I misspoke in not considering the location between the two refineries, but the what I meant to, I guess, allude to is that the quality bank adjustment is not something that the state controls. It's something the quality bank administrator determines. And so when I'm comparing RIV versus RIK, We're talking about barrels, you know, that get to the Valdez Marine Terminal are purchased by Tesoro or sent to the West Coast on our behalf by the producers in the RIV situation. The net back formula for both of those situations will both include a quality bank adjustment that is going to be the same.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And when you say that they're going to be the same, would not Flint Hills pay more for the quality bank end, and Tesoro could actually see a, I would call it a credit more than anything else, for because the quality of the crude oil is less at the Valdez Marine Terminal than it was at Pump Station 1. So any draw, maybe I'm not understanding it right, but any draw from Flint Hills or Petrostar would be a they would have to pay more for the quality bank versus Tesoro at the other end of the line.
Mr. Speaker, through the chair, that's my understanding as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comments? Thank you very much. We'll move to public testimony on House Bill 373, approval of sale of royalty oil to Tesoro. For public testimony, please state your name and affiliation. We'll have 3 minutes for testimony. As of now, we don't have anybody online, but we have we have Mr. Purdy. Do you want to testify? Mr. Perry, please come forward, state your name and affiliation, and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Fred Parity, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Also, I'm the designee to the Royalty Board, and just wanted to note for the committee that we carefully considered this contract and made appropriate revisions to it during our board meeting and support the recommendation that's before you. It's interesting to note that the declining volumes in throughput through TAPS are resulting in declining royalty barrels, if you will, for in-kind purposes, and this proposed contract and the amendments that were worked to it takes care of both our in-state refining facilities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Thank you very much. We have Mr. Matt Gill from Tesoro. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Matt Gill. I'm the External Affairs Senior Manager for Tesoro Alaska. I'm here today to urge you to support House Bill 373, an act approving and ratifying sale of royalty oil by the state of Alaska to Tesoro Corporation and Tesoro Refining and Marketing Company, LLC, and providing for an effective date. By way of background, the Tesoro Corporation is a Fortune 100 company and is an independent refiner and marketer of petroleum products. Tesoro's refining operations started in Alaska with the purchase of the Kenai Refinery back in 1969. Our Kenai Refinery has the operational capacity of up to 72,000 barrels per day. It's primarily focused on jet and diesel production, followed by gasoline and gasoline blend stocks, heating oil and heavy fuel oils, propane, and asphalt. We operate a 68-mile common carrier products pipeline that transports jet fuel, gasoline, and diesel fuel to the Port of Anchorage and the Anchorage International Airport. The wholesale delivery of our products occurs through our terminals in Kenai, Anchorage, our Nikiski dock, and the Port of Anchorage. In addition to being the largest taxpayer on the Kenai Peninsula Borough, Tesoro is also able to provide over 225 family wage jobs at the refinery and at our terminals, along with about 30 full-time contractors that are working in and around the refinery year-round. We are a major supporter of the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council, CIRCAC, as well as the largest member of the Cook Inlet Spill Prevention and Response Team, CISPRI. We actively support a wide range of local events and programs. In 2015, we gave over $300,000 in grants from our Tesoro Foundation, and it's our intention to beat that number in 2016. Each year we sponsor all the 5th and 6th grade classes in the Kenai Peninsula to conduct a mission at the Kenai Challenger Learning Center. And we are the signature sponsor of the Caring for the Kenai program, as well as the founding sponsor of the statewide Alaska Business Week program. Tesoro strongly urges you to support House Bill 273. This legislation is a result of over a year's worth of dialogue and productive negotiations between the Department of Natural Resources and the Tesoro Corporation. By all accounts, our company was very impressed with the state's ability to understand our issues and arrive at a mutually beneficial agreement that is truly a win-win for both parties, as well as accommodating to the other refineries in the state. For the state, the DNR estimates it will continue to receive a price for its royalty in-kind oil that exceeds the price it would have received if it elected to keep its royalty oil in value. The estimated additional revenue to the state is between $45 and $56 million for the span of this contract. For Tesoro, this five-year contract will provide us with a stable supply of ANS crude, while also giving us the volumetric flexibility to help accommodate seasonal fluctuations in demand for our refined products. The availability, flexibility, and stability that this contract offers will have a positive impact on our ability to maintain the ongoing operations at our Kenai refinery. In order to accommodate the needs of the other in-state refineries, Tesoro and the state modified this contract to reduce the volumes as well as eliminate a proration clause and a five-year extension option. Tesoro believes in Alaska's future and is committed to being an active corporate citizen. We look forward to continuing to provide Alaskans with clean-burning fuels, keep your homes warm, and your cars, boats, and snow machines traveling across this great state. I urge you to support House Bill 373. Online as well from Tesoro, I have our Kenai Refinery Manager, Cameron Hunt, as well as our Senior Director of North American Crude Buying, Damon Van Zandt, to help answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I probably should have asked this of the presenters, but the calculation of the sales price. We've got the RAK differential from ANS West. Is that a daily or a monthly value, or how is that? I mean, it's not over term of the contract, so it's got to be on some schedule.
Yeah, that's a good question. One that I'd like to point, if I can get Damon Van Zandt to answer that. I believe he's online.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you, Damon.
Okay. Sure. Yeah. The question was, how is the price arrived at if it's a daily calculation? And I believe the contract references two pricing sources, Platts and Reuters, and they publish a price for the Alaska North Slope crude, which is actually a West Coast delivered price, and that is a daily assessment. They produce a high and low price, and the contract takes the average of those highs and lows for a day, and then it actually takes a monthly average where it computes the average daily price for the entire month of delivery, and then that establishes the monthly average price that we pay. And I think that what I heard earlier was, how was the marine transportation discount arrived at of $1.95? It probably is worth pointing out that that price is a U.S. West Coast delivered price, so it's a price that represents cargoes of ANS that trade down into California and the Pacific Northwest. And that $1.95 marine discount represents the marine transportation to those delivery destinations from Valdez. So by taking the $1.95 off, you arrive back at a Valdez price. So maybe that'll help that earlier question that came up.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Damon Van Zandt. I'm the Senior Director of North America Crude Trading and Strategy.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Yeah, I appreciate that other average monthly. I guess I have a question, because we were told that it was $3.50 was the average transportation charge between Valdez and West Coast port, and I was wondering whether the $1.95 was related to transportation from Valdez to Nikiski, but I guess
I believe the $3.50 was representative of the royalty and value marine discount, which that's why the royalty and kind contract is basically $1.55 better. royalty and value contracts that you sell, it costs you another $1.55 to sell those back to the producers. And actually, for us, we just deduct the $1.95, and that's the same discount that I believe Tesoro and PetroStar takes off the ANS published price.
Oh, thank you for that explanation.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Mr. Gill, Mr. Schein testified that since, I think, 1979, there's been this rare occurrence where the state has taken royalty in value. What is your understanding of this sort of gap, and whether it's avoidable in the future, or if you have any sort of explanation?
Yeah, my understanding, there was a it just became very difficult to buy royalty oil in the past. There were netbacks and coming back on contracts we had with additional fees year after the fact. That appears to have been alleviated recently. We engaged 2 years ago in, I think, our first royalty contract in many, many years. Very satisfied with the terms we came up with. We extended it for 1 year. That expired in January. Again, we've had great working relationship. I think we've ironed out all those, the majority of the issues that kept us from engaging in royalty oil in the past. And we're happy to be back in business with the state. Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is Jim Schein with DNR again. Just to clarify with Representative Justison through the chair, there's been only a few instances in the time of the state where we're taking all of our royalty in value. We always take a certain portion of our royalty in value, at least 5%, so that way we are still given market information and netback pricing so that we can ensure that we're still receiving better than royalty in value. But we have been selling RIK since 1979, a portion of our overall volume. But that fluctuates depending on who is purchasing and the actual production and how many barrels we have available. So with respect to our current situation, it was a combination of market factors, really, with Flint Hills. I mean, we had 18,000 to 30,000 barrels under contract with them before they shut down. Mm-hmm. And so when they ceased operation in 2014, we had a one-year contract with the Soro, which was subsequently extended, which terminated January 31st of this year. But as I indicated with the lengthy public process involved in getting to where we are today, there is a long lead time involved in these commercial negotiations to get us to where we are today. So we can't essentially flip a switch and start selling RIK oil for over long-term contracts when things become available. It takes a little bit longer than that. Thank you.
Representative Carr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's kind of where I was trying to fill in the gaps there of what had happened with my earlier question. And so one of the issues that came up was the 5 year extension. And so how much time, you know, when you say it takes a bit of lead time, you know, how much time does that actually take? And, you know, will you start that process somewhere midway through this contract so that we're not, pushed up against any deadline? Is that how it would naturally occur if that Flint Hills anomaly hadn't happened?
Yes, Representative Tarr, through the chair, that is correct. The lead time, based on what we've seen in this process, is 14 months probably.
Oh, wow.
We go out for solicitation. That happened last January in 2015. And here we are towards the end of March 2016 with the contract before you. And so the five-year contract with Tesoro, assuming that Tesoro is interested in purchasing RIK volumes after this contract terminates, that conversation would probably start in advance of the termination of this contract. Mm-hmm. But at that time, we will go out for an additional public solicitation and gauge market demand to see which entities are interested in purchasing at whichever volumes we have available at that time. But one of my earlier statements, I mentioned that we're negotiating contract with PetroStar right now, and we're doing a one-year contract concurrently. We're negotiating a four-year contract, so that would commence at the end of the one-year contract, so that both entities will have five-year contracts terminating at approximately the same time in 2021. At that time, we'll have a better handle on production forecasts and which royalty volumes we have available to sell to the market. So you should have a four-year PetroStar contract before you, if everything goes well, next spring.
one final one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just trying to think, with the shorter-term contracts, those can be done without the same kind of legislative approval, which is why we weren't so closely involved in what took place during the gap with Flint Hills and Tesoro.
That's correct, Representative Tarr, through the chair. If a contract is less than 365 days, it does not require legislative ratification, and that's in, I think, 3806.055. But with respect to contracts for 1 year or longer, they require legislative ratification. And so in order to meet PetroStar's near-term demands, in order to deliver royalty barrels to them in 2016, mm-hmm. We're seeking to do a short-term, less than 1 year contract while currently negotiating a 4 year contract that would extend past that. It's a new contract, but it would go past when that 1 year contract terminates.
Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Matt, thank you, Mr. Chair. The cheapest Tesoro gas on the peninsula is about a half mile from the refinery. Is that being trucked down from Anchorage, or is it being trucked over from the refinery?
I believe that is being trucked over from the refinery.
There's been a lot of speculation on that. Thanks.
Yeah, I hear a lot of stories.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am curious for in-state use, how much of Tesoro's refined products, I mean, it looks like it's predominantly on the jet fuel side, not the sort of what we would see at the, as it's described in the letter, as your, you know, retail fuels. I just don't have the numbers on that, if you have that handy.
Yeah, pretty much all of our gasoline, all of our jet diesel is consumed in the state. With Flint Hills shutting down, that, you know, demand for gasoline definitely picked up, and we were able to fill that. About the only thing that goes out is the bottom a third of the barrel, the heavy bottoms that we can't do anything with because of how the refinery is configured, and so we have to store it and find a home for it somewhere down south.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anybody else?
One more.
Representative Olson.
Matt, is there another federal mandate like the ultra low sulfur diesel that you got hit with a few years ago? Is there another mandate coming down the road on production?
Yeah, Tier 3 gasoline standards, I believe, go into effect. And Cameron, you might be able to illuminate on that, but I believe they go into effect this year. It's volumetric. It requires extra hydro treating of the gasoline to pull out additional sulfur. So that's coming up, and we're prepared to meet those standards.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah, just
Representative George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that point, this is an issue that's come up with the cruising industry, right? That's been highlighted by the cruise ship industry and the impact on its market and prices and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's a different. That's the heavy bunker fuel, what they're allowed to use in their ships. Okay. I think that's what's driving some of the cargo companies to switch over to LNG.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're within 3 mile or something, you have to use cleaner burning fuels, which is more expensive.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you very much for your testimony. And we don't have anyone else online, or is there anyone else in the audience? We don't have anyone else. We'll now close public testimony. Is there further discussion on the House Bill 373 from the committee?
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just am pleased that we have something before us today that, because it'll be the RIK, sounds like will bring in, you know, roughly $50 million more in value. So thanks for that happening at a time like this. That's good news.
Thank you very much. Representative Olson.
Just a comment. I think this is the most non-controversial bill we've had all session.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Heron.
The most unamended one.
Amen. Anyone else? Is your objection still maintained?
No objection.
No objection?
No.
Oh.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Bill number 373
That's document number 29-GH2225/A from committee with the accompanying zero physical note and individual recommendations.
Will you take the roll call, please?
No objections.
Oh, sorry. Okay. HB 373 moves with attached fiscal note and an individual recommendation from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee report.
I'd like to call the Resource Committee meeting back to order. And we're going to move on to House Bill 253, which is the electronic tax return mining license tax and fees. And we do have a committee substitute that I would like to bring forward.
I'd like to move to adopt committee substitute for House Bill number 253 as a working document, Mr. Chair.
And I'll object for discussion, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. I do have my staff here, Julie Morris. Julie, if you could go through the summary of changes for us, please.
Certainly. My name is Julie Morris, staff to Representative Tallarico. And the summary of changes is from version A to N. Section 1 is deleted, eliminating the penalty if a taxpayer fails to electronically submit a return. Section 2 is deleted. It's elimination of taxpayer required to submit a return electronically. Section 3 is amended to leave a 3-year exemption rather than a 3.5 years. Section 4 is amended by changing the 9 to 8 of the excess net income over 100,000. Section 5, there was no changes. Section 6 was no changes. Section 7 repeals the deletion to the exemption that is related to the bill for the period of exemption in Section 3. Sorry, that got a little wordy. Mm-hmm. Section 8, applicable to amend to reflect the exemption being retained. Section 9 is deleted because the period of exemption from tax is retained. And Section 10, 11, and 12, no change, provides for a transition language and effective dates.
Yeah.
Thank you. Discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My section only goes through Section 8. And
I have a sectional that I can read to you.
What I can loan to you, Paul? No.
But Mr. Chairman,
Representative Tarr,
I have that piece of paper as well, but the actual committee substitute
only goes
Section 8, actual bill.
The actual bill I put into the sectional analysis, the changes are meant to reflect what happened. If you look at the sectional analysis, it does the actual CS for version N. Mm-hmm. If you like, I can take you through that.
Mr. Speaker, did you?
Mr. Chairman, are we on backslash N or are we on backslash A?
We're on N.
N.
Sectional analysis. Yeah. N.
A does go to Section 12, and N only does go to Section 8.
Correct.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think that just the easy way is that sections 9, 10, and 11 were deleted.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the CS that we're discussing only has 8 sections in it.
Okay. That's why it ends.
That's why it ends. Further discussion? Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, on page 2, lines 17 through 19, 17 and 18, the applicability, is this wording meant to be that the mining license only, section A, only applies to those that begin production on or after that date, and therefore if a mining operation was in operation before that, they do not have to get ever get a mining license? Sorry, I'm just reading this now, trying to figure out. But that's the question. The section 8 or section A, 110A, seems to be only applicable on those after that date, and section A of the CS seems to require obtaining a mining license.
Mr. Chair, I think under the uncodified law in section 5, it adds an applicability to that section that relates to the exemption period under A, and then under C, it's applicable to the net income of the taxpayer from the property in the state during the taxable year that begins on or after the effective date back in section 2. Did I make any sense for you? I apologize.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And on section B there of the applicability section, that's correct. It's starting on or after, or that begins on or after the effective date.
Yes.
But it's a taxable year, so that's every taxable year. My question is,
okay,
on the applicability of section A, does that only apply to the 3.5 years, or does that apply to the mining license requirement, which is section A? And so it's just a technical understanding, yeah, of trying to figure out what that applies.
And I think we have, I don't want to put him on the spot, but I believe Mr. Burnett maybe would come up, and if he'd like to come forward and address that. This is actual language out of the original bill.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Seaton, as we're reading this right now, it's pretty clear that the intent of Section 5 there is to apply to the 3.5 year holiday, tax holiday, not applying to, only applying to new production, now the 3 year, so it was 3.5, and that the license applies to each year thereafter. We'll look at it very carefully, as we just saw this morning, but I believe that's the way I read it, and clearly what was intended from our understanding.
Representative Tarr, after Mr. Burnett identifies himself for the record.
For the record, Jerry Burnett, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue.
Thank you. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do think that is an issue, because from the original bill, it removed the 3.5 year exemption, so it made that section just about having to get a mining license, versus now in the committee substitute, that section is about both obtaining a license and the 3 year exemption. And I think it's going to have to be split into two sections there to make it so it's clear that every mining operation would have to obtain a license versus how long of an exemption period you'd have for taxes. Because otherwise, the way this reads, I think, the way Representative Seaton has questioned it, it sounds like those ones, you wouldn't have to get a mining license unless it was on or after the effective date. So it sort of has two separate things in that one section.
To the chair, to Representative Tarr, again, reading 110C is what the second applicability, which has what 010C, which is the new license fee every year. So, again, we'll have to look at that very – we'll have our attorneys look at it and look very carefully before Wednesday's meeting. But it's clear what the intent was from talking to the sponsor staff this morning.
Representative Joseph,
thank you, Mr. Chair. In both instances, although I still need to have the same concerns about some of the timing and impact, Section 8, which makes these – the Section 5 applicable July 1, 2016 would be in effect. Is that right? And the question is whether it's existing mines or the license requirement is for future licensees. But the effective date appears to be July 1, 2016. Is that right?
To the Chair, Representative Josephson, yes, that's what it says. So. Okay.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't see any new fiscal notes, but the original bill was about a $6 million fiscal note, and so I'm just wondering if you have any estimations on the change from the 9 in the original bill to the 8 here and what that means.
Through the Chair to Representative Tarr, in fiscal year 17, our fiscal year 18, because we're really not going to be collecting this until a year after we start, it looks like approximately $3.6 million and then 3.2, and it's about half of what it was, obviously, because it's a 1% change now instead of a 2% change. So it varies based on our current commodity price estimates and production estimates between 2.8 and $3.6 million per year over the life of the fiscal notes. And we will have a new fiscal note available for Wednesday. Well, we got this at 10 o'clock this morning. It was difficult to do a new fiscal note by then.
So, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a treatise that I ordered that I need to study sort of peer tax rates, but I had dinner last night with a friend of mine who's a court reporter and is doing the EIS formal hearings in 18 villages in the YK Delta, and she reminds me that the Donlin mine will be the largest gold mine in the world or something like that, and I'm just I'm still looking for some comfort that when that gets removed and severed from Alaska, that Alaskans are getting their fair share. Do you know how I can figure that out?
Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, we, I think, provided a number of documents to the committee early on with comparative tax rates for the United States and Canada. And it is a dilemma figuring that out because each of these mines is clearly unique. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the governor felt that the 9% rate was appropriate. Mm-hmm. But as you say, that's the largest gold mine. I think the Red Dog is certainly one of the largest zinc mines anywhere. The Greens Creek mine in Juneau is the largest silver producing mine in North America. I mean, we're not talking about small mines here. We're talking about large amounts of minerals being taken from the state.
Any other questions? Is your objection maintained, Representative Herron?
I'll remove my objection.
Okay. Any other objection to adopt it? This is adopting the CS. Any objections? Well, thank you very much. We have adopted the CS for our working draft. I let the committee know what I would like to do. There may be amendments to this particular legislation, so if you could get those delivered to me by 10 a.m. on Wednesday, that would be prior to our next meeting, the next time we take this bill up, that would be great. And we've got a pretty hefty schedule that we're working on, but we're definitely going to get focused on this and see what we can do with it. There is another committee of referral that I think needs to take a very hard look at it. So, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Didn't get to talk too much, and I apologize when Julie was up there. Maybe should have asked this. But The committee substitute removes the movement towards the electronic submission. And I just wondered, you know, particularly for these large size companies, it didn't seem like that would be too troublesome. And I know the state, we spent a hefty sum upgrading our database through the Department of Revenue so that we could get everything all in one place and understand it better. And so I just wondered kind of what the thinking was for removing those. I can understand perhaps thinking, okay, maybe delaying a penalty until you've implemented a new program and given people an opportunity to participate. Maybe that part not being quite as necessary initially, but just the electronic submission seems like we could be sort of moving in the direction that the department wanted to go, and so just wanted to understand why that was removed.
Okay. And maybe, Julie, can you address that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Representative Tarr, through the chair. I had questions about that myself, so we had legal look into it to see, you know, because it was through their recommendation that we take it out of the bill. Mm-hmm. And because it was what was originally in the version, they omitted from the bill, and when I had questions about that, in sections 1 and 2 apply to any tax return or report to be submitted under AS32 to be filed electronically, not just returns for mining taxes. However, the bill only amends filing requirements related to mining taxes, and there are several other sections of the tax law that should be changed to accommodate the new electronic filing requirements. Mm. So basically they're saying you need to have a separate bill that would address that issue. Mm. Okay. So that's, and we can provide this legal memo to you too if Mr. Chairman wants it.
Representative Olson.
Actually, there's a separate bill coming.
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, would you like to take up Ms. Morris on her kind offer and look at that?
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, all members can get that.
We will distribute that to all of the members. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, we will. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, we will have this back in front of us again on Wednesday, and we don't have any other business before the committee. So thank you so much for being here today. We will adjourn at 2:20. We're adjourned.